Sometimes I try to imagine a world without literature. I would miss books on airplanes. Bookstores and libraries would have a lot of extra shelf space, and my own bookshelves would no longer be overflowing. The publishing industry wouldn't exist as we know it, nor would Amazon, and there'd be nothing on my bedside table when I can't sleep at night. All this would be unfortunate, but it barely scratches the surface of what would be lost if literature had never existed, if stories were told only orally and had never been written down. Such a world is almost impossible for us to imagine. Our sense of history, of the rise and fall of empires and nations, would be completely different. Most philosophical and political ideas would never have come into existence because the literature that gave rise to them wouldn't have been written. Almost all religious beliefs would disappear, along with the scriptures in which they were expressed. Literature isn't just for book lovers. Ever since it emerged 4,000 years ago, it has shaped the lives of most humans on planet Earth. As the three astronauts aboard Apollo 8 were to find. All right, Apollo 8. You are go for TLI. Over. Roger. We understand we are go for TLI. By late 1968, circling the Earth was no longer a novelty. Apollo 8, the latest American mission, had just spent 2 hours and 27 minutes in terrestrial orbit. There had been no major incidents, but Frank Frederick Borman II, James Arthur Lovell Jr., and William Allison Anders were on edge. Their ship was about to attempt a new maneuver, translunar injection, TLI. They were pointing away from Earth, ready to shoot straight into space. Their destination was the moon. At any moment, they would speed up to 24,207 miles per hour, faster than anyone had ever traveled before. The mission of Apollo 8 was relatively simple. They wouldn't land on the moon. They didn't even have a landing vehicle on board. They were to see what the moon was like, identify an appropriate landing site for a future Apollo mission, and bring back photos and film material that experts could study. TLI, the translunar injection that would power their flight to the moon, proceeded as planned. Apollo 8 sped up and took the plunge into space. The farther they went, the better they could see what no one had ever seen before. The Earth. Borman interrupted procedures to call out the land masses that were rotating below him. Florida, the Cape, Africa. He could see them all at once. He was the first human ever to see the Earth as a single globe. Anders took the picture that would capture this new sight, Earth rising above the surface of the moon. As the Earth was getting smaller and smaller and the moon bigger and bigger, the astronauts had trouble capturing everything on camera. Ground control realized that the astronauts needed to rely on a simpler technology, the spoken word. We would like you, if possible, to go into as much of a detailed description as you poets can. Becoming poets was a task for which the astronauts' training hadn't prepared them, and to which they brought no particular skills. They had made it through the ruthless selection process of NASA because they were the best fighter pilots and knew something about rocket science. Anders had attended the Naval Academy and then joined the Air Force, where he had served as an all-weather interceptor at Air Defense Command in California and Iceland. But now he needed to come up with words, the right words. He singled out the lunar sunrises and sunsets. These in particular bring out the stark nature of the terrain, he said, and the long shadows really bring out the relief that is here and hard to see at this very bright surface that we're going over right now. Anders was painting a stark picture of bright light hitting the hard surface of the moon and making precise shadows. Perhaps his job as all-weather interceptor helped. He was becoming a poet in the great American tradition of imagism, perfectly suited to a stark and brilliant thing like the moon. Lovell had also trained at the Naval Academy, after which he had joined the Navy. Like the others, he had spent most of his life on air bases. In space, he showed a predilection for another school of poetry, the sublime. "The vast loneliness up here of the moon is awe-inspiring," he ventured. Philosophers had reflected on the awe that nature could inspire. Waterfalls, storms, anything grand, too grand to be neatly captured and framed, would serve. But they could not have imagined what it would be like to be out there, in space. It was the ultimate sublime, the awe-inspiring experience of vastness that was certain to dwarf them, crush them, make them feel small. Just as these philosophers had predicted, this experience made Lovell relish the safety of home. "It makes you realize just what you have back there on Earth. The Earth from here is a grand oasis in the big vastness of space." Dr. Wernher von Braun, who had built the rocket for Apollo 8, must have understood. He liked to say that a space scientist is an engineer who loves poetry. Finally, there was Borman, their commanding officer. Borman had graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point, entered the Air Force, and become a fighter pilot. On board Apollo 8, he waxed eloquent. "It's a vast, lonely, forbidding-type existence or expanse of nothing." Lonely, forbidding, existence, nothing. It sounded as if Borman had been hanging out on the left bank reading Jean-Paul Sartre.